This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
I think today is the big day that Joe Biden hangs out with union guys in Pittsburgh, heads up to the Berg, and tries to be a regular guy with his lunch pail, lunch and eat or something. And as I remind you all the time, Joe Biden is no friend to the middle class workers because he tried to destroy the coal industry in Pennsylvania and other places. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. The Cioli Show. Happy Monday on Twitter at Rich Cioli and 1210WPHG.com. Look, you know, it's one of those things where I have to give you these important updates on the 2020 election because everyone just thinks this is a cult of personality heading into 2020. There's something to be said about having a record and that record becoming a part of the conversation. So let's look at Joe Biden's record, shall we? Isn't that what reasonable and sober-minded people do? They look at the record of things. Joe Biden's up in Pittsburgh today, and he's going to talk. He's going to be Mr. Regular Guy because it's his whole thing. I'm just a regular guy. I'm like you. I'm from Scranton, even though I moved from Scranton when I was eight. And I'm all about the working guy. See, I'm all about the working guy, so trust me to be the working guy's best friend. Well, a lot of working guys, believe it or not, work in coal. I mean, you believe this and you know this, but apparently people don't realize that. So those working guys have to ask a question. Do you want a guy to be president who was the vice president of the president who launched a war on coal and stood by as that war on coal happened? And by the way, did nothing about it. Nothing. He didn't do anything about it. Why would he, though? Because that was the thing at the time. At the time it was, yeah, let's go after the coal people. But now that he's running and he's targeting Pennsylvania as his main state, which is great for us because, hey, our area once again is going to be the state that decides the presidency. A lot about his record is coming out. And as things about his record come out, well, you know, people have to be reminded of who the guy really is and what he really stood for. And going after coal was one of those things. Going after coal was one of the things that Joe Biden and Barack Obama and the administration did quite well, I should say, quite well. Now, coal is booming again. And whether or not you like coal or not, the point is that there are coal miners and families and towns that love coal. And when you go after coal, you devastate their whole community. You devastate their schools. You devastate their jobs. You devastate everything. It is absolutely one of those issues that resonates beyond just even the coal miner himself. And you've seen towns destroyed over this. You've seen regions of the country destroyed over this. And the president has been very mindful of coming out and saying, just, you know, right out of the bat from day one, I'm with coal. I side with coal people and I'm with coal miners and we're going to have coal flourish again. And just like that, when he did that, he forced, of course, all the Democrats to be on the left of that issue. Now, there's no place for a Democrat to be pro-coal. There isn't. Not in this Democrat Party right now. There's just no room for it. And this is the problem, is that Joe Biden is going to try very hard to not even discuss it. Like, for example, Beto O'Rourke today, he put out a $5 trillion, with a T, a $5 trillion plan to combat climate crisis. All right? So Beto, $5 trillion. Now, who the hell wants to spend $5 trillion on this? Nobody does. But, well, there are some people that do. They're the same people that spend $40 on pancakes on the weekend at brunch. That crowd loves this idea. His four-pillar framework, a sweeping $5 trillion plan. The greatest threat we face, he says, which will test our country, our democracy, every single one of us, is climate change. We have one last chance to unleash the ingenuity and political will of hundreds of millions of Americans to meet this moment before it's too late. One last chance. I don't know what that means. Because I thought we had 12 years, which would give us many chances. I don't know why we have one last chance. It's not like you're undoing Thanos' snap. What, can't you have more than one chance? But Beto says one chance to get it right, and that's it. Or we're dead. But other candidates say we have 12 years, which would then, of course, give us lots and lots of time to try and fail and try again. It also gives us the opportunity now to spend $5 trillion. Wow. The plan begins with proposed executive actions, including rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement on day one, and an O'Rourke administration moving quickly to raise efficiency standards for buildings, cars, and appliances. Longer-term executive actions include setting a net zero emissions carbon budget for federal lands by 2030 and adding more national parks and monuments to protect land and seascapes. But you know what I love, too, is that the efficiency standards for buildings, this is great. Because Bill de Blasio opened up a door on this, I guess a week ago or 2 weeks ago, when he said, we're going to ban buildings made out of glass and steel. Right? He didn't just come out and say, we're going to try to find ways to make buildings more energy efficient, which the private sector does all the time. Because the businesses don't want to waste a lot of money on energy costs. Who does, right? So instead, what they do is they try to make buildings that are, in fact, as energy efficiently as they can. And there's all kinds of awards and incentives different companies win for building buildings that are more energy efficient. But the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, who threatens to run for president, he came out and said, we're going to ban buildings made of glass and steel. Now, I don't know how the hell you build a building without glass or steel. Legos, possibly. I don't know how they hold up in a windstorm. I'm not sure. But I mean, the nice thing is if you knock them down, you can just quickly rebuild them. But still. And so now, knowing that, that's where the marker's gone to the left, everybody has to then stay in that same territory. This is what happens. In the presidential primary, as one of them moves further to the left, everybody else has to play in that end zone, or otherwise they're going to look like a moderate standing in the middle, and that doesn't work out well for them in the primary. So now it's a big deal to go as bold as you can and to just throw crazy numbers out there. $5 trillion. What the hell's $5 trillion anyway? His bill, Beto's bill, would mobilize $5 trillion over the next 10 years to upgrade infrastructure and spur innovation, including more than $1 trillion in tax incentives to reduce emissions, and $250 billion dedicated directly to research and development. And of course, he proposes to mobilize this capital with a $1.5 trillion investment from revenues generated by structural changes to the tax code that ensure corporations and the wealthiest among us pay their fair share. And that we finally end the tens of billions of dollars of tax breaks currently given to fossil fuel companies. This is the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal. This is what it is. Now, this is the fourth pillar of the plan, of his plan. We'll focus on fighting the most immediate impacts of climate change in the form of severe weather. So he's going to try to do something to fight weather, which I think is really fun. Now, O'Rourke's campaign spokesman, Chris Evans, I don't know if it's the same guy who plays Captain America in the movies, I'm not sure, said the plan was developed in concert with impacted individuals and communities, academics, scientists, entrepreneurs, advocates, and activists, and local, state, tribal, and federal government leaders. All right, what does Joe Biden do with this? What does Joe Biden do with this nonsense, this craziness? And that's the problem for him right now as he heads to Pittsburgh to hang out with the union guys, to be one of the guys, you know? That's the problem. And his hypocrisy on coal, because when it seemed cool for Democrats to be anti-coal, he was all in on that. Now, it certainly is not time for Democrats to get on board the coal train or the steel train, of course, and they can't do it now. But if they pretend like they're just not going to talk about it, there are many people who will happily remind them of what they said in the past, including certainly we'll do that as well. But in the meantime, the other question for Joe Biden is, what about all that work you've had done? Washington Examiner had a piece today. Botox, hair plugs, veneers. Biden could escape the cosmetic surgery scrutiny Hillary Clinton endured. Why? Because he's a man, you see, and men have the privilege of being able to hide their plastic surgery. Please, people have been calling him Plugs Biden for years. For years. Probably a decade or so. The bad plugs, years ago he had them. He also filled in his front hairline to camouflage the bad plugs, and he had Botox and a facelift and all these. And nobody really cares, by the way. Nobody really cares except that there's a thing now among Democrats, which is, why is it that when a woman has plastic surgery or any sort of work, they comment on that. And then when a man does it, they don't comment on it. They just let it go. They don't even acknowledge it. Now, who do you think is putting that out there? There's very same people who are putting out this constant phrase over and over again that the Democratic Party is now the party of 70-year-plus old white men. That's their pinnacle of diversity. That's their starting point right there. really old white guys. That's what they begin with. Really old white guys. Who's putting that out as well? Democrats are. They're in a full-on civil war right now, like the likes of which we haven't seen in a very, very long time. And over the weekend, I noticed that everybody who tries to pretend as if Joe Biden getting in the race was the Democrats going, oh, yes, finally an adult in the room. We're so lucky. No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, it just ratcheted up the war. And Joe Biden's got an Anita Hill problem. Because, of course, now Democrats have to believe all women, except women who accuse Democrats, obviously, because otherwise you'd have a lot of things very, very different, even within our own area. But in 1998, Joe Biden said that Anita Hill was lying. Anita Hill, of course, as you remember, was the woman who said that now Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas sexually harassed her. Made a comment about a pubic hair and a Coke can, all the other stuff. You remember this well. So Joe Biden's running around now saying that he always believed Anita Hill. Always believed her. But it turns out in 1998, he said that she was lying. Molly Hemingway put out a piece over at The Federalist. When the vice president went on The View on Friday saying he believed her from the start, he had previously told former Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter that it was clear her testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee included lies. Quote, "Not only didn't I vote for Clarence Thomas, I believed her from the beginning. I was against Clarence Thomas," he told The View over the weekend, or on Friday. But in 1998, Biden admitted to Specter that it was clear to me from the way she was answering the questions, Hill was lying about a key part of her testimony. The exchange was published in Specter's 2000 memoir, Passion for Truth, from finding JFK's single bullet to questioning Anita Hill to impeaching Clinton. And perhaps you've read that book from the former Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter, turncoat, as many people describe him. But the book is there, and I don't think Joe Biden was lying when he told that to Arlen Specter, and I don't think Arlen Specter was lying when he put it in his book in 2000, and there it is. But what do you do now if you're Joe Biden? You got to believe Anita Hill. And this problem for him is not going away. There are forces that want to get rid of Joe Biden as quickly as possible. So they're going to trash him over this. And the fact that all this comes out is a good reminder that Joe Biden is a liar. I mean, he lied about this and he's lying about it now, and he lied about it then and he's lying now. And Joe Biden has to atone for so many things now. So many things. And I think it's fitting, too, as he comes to Pennsylvania, that the guy who was the United States Senator from Pennsylvania was the guy that basically outed him in his book that he did not think Anita Hill was telling the truth. And I find that to be a rich irony right there. I really do. A deliciously rich irony. Because if you don't believe Anita Hill, then you don't believe all women, because all women are to be believed, except the women who accuse Democrats, like I said. And then if you don't believe all women and you're an old white guy, you got a problem. As Joe Biden's finding out now, he's got lots and lots of problems. Meanwhile, the economy is going great, and the Republicans are all in a very, very peaceful mode to just get behind their president, their nominee, and just go forward without a primary, which is why over the weekend they spent so much time talking about obstruction of Congress, which I will give you the latest on that nonsense. So Joe Biden's Anita Hill problem won't go away anytime soon, but lots of problems that Joe Biden has won't go away anytime soon. Meanwhile, the president responded to that awful attack on the synagogue in California. The rabbi out there, Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein, whose synagogue in San Diego was attacked on Saturday, described his phone call from the president to MSNBC's Cassie Hunt. Now, I want you to think about this from the context of what did Joe Biden say when he ran for president? He launched his campaign. First word out of his mouth was Charlottesville. Right. And the entire thing, the basis for Joe Biden's campaign was Charlottesville. The president said there's good people on both sides. He praised Nazis. He praised white supremacists. It's a complete lie. But this is what this is literally his starting point. Joe Biden's starting point is the vice president's anti-Semitic. He encourages anti-Semites and he loves Nazis and he encourages Nazis and blah, blah, blah. Right? That's Joe Biden's starting point for president of the United States. So this awful thing happens over the weekend. The media starts blaming Trump's America for this because, of course, that's what happens, obviously. President has been praised by Israel saying that they don't know a better friend than Donald Trump. Netanyahu thinks the world of Trump and attributes him as being one of his closest friends and allies. Of course, the president has Jewish family members now, but leave that aside. It's a narrative, right? It's a narrative that they want to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, that he stokes the flames of anti-Semitism. Now, I don't know if this call that the rabbi had with the president will get more coverage than it did from MSNBC's Cassie Hunt, but the rabbi explained the phone call he had with the president. Take a listen.
I was totally in awe and in shock to receive a call from the White House. I thought it may have been just a prank call to me. Someone's trying to lift up my spirits. And then our president took the phone and I recognized it was really him. And I've never spoken to a president before. He was so gracious and generous with his words, exceedingly comforting to me, to my community. And he spoke to me like a friend, like a buddy. And I didn't realize I'm talking to the president of the United States of America. He was just exceedingly kind and sensitive. And we spoke for close to 15 minutes. And I thought to myself, for the president of the United States of America to take time of his day, 15 minutes to talk to me about the issues at hand, was just absolutely incredible and admirable. And we spoke about anti-Semitism. And I asked him, Mr. President, what are you doing about anti-Semitism in the United States of America? And he was very generous in explaining that he has made it as a priority. And he said, listen, I got a son-in-law who's Jewish, I got a daughter who's Jewish, I got grandkids that are Jewish, and I love Israel, and I support Israel, and I'm going to do whatever we can to help protect the Jewish people in the United States of America and abroad.
Okay, now contrast that 50 minutes the president spends on the phone with this rabbi, right? And contrast that with what the narrative is that Joe Biden, the media, and others are pushing, which is that he is a guy who was pushing for white nationalism, white supremacy, Nazis, and on and on and on, right? Contrast the two. How many anti-Semites, how many Nazis call rabbis and spend an hour on the phone with them after an attack like this? How many do it out of curiosity? Is that something that Hitler and his administration were known for back then? This is the media now, with their usual nonsense, blaming the synagogue attack on Trump. This is a montage from Grabian. Take a listen.
This is an epidemic, and we have a president who not only will not acknowledge that we have an epidemic of white nationalist terror after New Zealand said just a few people, he's providing the mood music for it. That is the reality we face.
Yeah, I think the president needs to at some point look in the mirror and understand that the rhetoric, the words he uses in all of this, inflame this big part of what's going on in America, give permission to the most craziest people in America.
And it happens in part because there's a climate set at the top of unbelievable, constant lies and hostility and division in this country, not only as policy, but with his affect.
The conspiracy theories cited by these neo-Nazis in Pittsburgh and New Zealand and now outside San Diego, conspiracy theory that Trump never condemned and actually seemed to support.
And we don't know if it has any connection to the politics that's going on. But I mean, it would be a stretch to say that it doesn't.
Somebody that's anti-immigrant in California, the anti-immigrant hate and refugees that's going on in the country, what happened at the Tree of Life, and then you couple that with the president's language, it's a big problem.
And remember, Donald Trump, just over the last couple of days, have been defending what he said in Charlottesville. And it echoed, called back into our memory, right? Something that just happened not too long ago. What happened in Pittsburgh? Donald Trump and all of this hate, right? It's part of the environment of today, and he bears some responsibility for it.
Okay. Now, that's the media pushing the narrative and pushing a nonsense. And you hear the usual voices, Don Lemon, it's MSNBC, it's CNN, the usual stuff, right? This is all him, and this is what he wants, and this is his America. The rabbi comes out and says, hey, the guy spent an hour on the phone with me, and he's talked about this. The president condemns these attacks and everything else. Do you know that on the day that Charlottesville happened, the president said at the time, because I wanted to see what the New York Times coverage was back then, because I've heard a lot of mixed things and people don't usually get the truth on things. So New York Times on August 12, 2017 said the latest on Charlottesville, at least one person has died in violent clashes over a white nationalist protest in Virginia. President Donald J. Trump has commented on the violence. Quote, "We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides." Okay? And when that happened now, obviously that happened, and then they all said, well, both sides, he's saying that people were, he's supporting Nazism. New York Times from that day, this is from August 12, 2017. Ready? White nationalists had long planned a demonstration over the city's decision to remove a statue of Robert E. Lee, but the rally quickly exploded into racial taunting, shoving, and outright brawling, prompting the governor to declare a state of emergency and the National Guard to join the police in clearing the area. And it goes on to talk about how they were prepared for the violence and that sort of thing. They were ready for it. They thought it would come. They thought it would sort of happen and that kind of things. Many of the groups have felt emboldened since the election of Donald J. Trump as president. They bring up David Duke. They bring up Richard Spencer. They bring up all these people, right? Saturday afternoon, President Trump, speaking at the start of a veterans event at his golf club in Bedminster, addressed what he described as the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville. In his comments, President Trump condemned the bloody protest, but he did not specifically criticize the white nationalist rally and its neo-Nazi slogans, blaming hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides, saying it's been going on for a long, long time in our country. It's not Donald Trump. It's not Barack Obama. Mr. Trump adding that he had been in contact with Virginia officials after calling for the swift restoration of law and order. The president came under criticism from some who said he had not responded strongly enough against racism and that he failed to condemn the white nationalist groups by name who were behind the rally. Okay? Now, late on Saturday night, the Department of Justice announced it was opening a civil rights investigation into the circumstances conducted around the rally, and they were going to do all this as a civil rights investigation. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, said the violence and deaths in Charlottesville strike at the heart of American law and justice. And with such actions arise from racial bigotry and hatred, they betray our core values and cannot be tolerated. The turmoil in Charlottesville began with a march Friday night by white nationalists on the campus of the University of Virginia and escalated Saturday morning as demonstrators from both sides gathered in and around the park, waving Confederate flags, chanting Nazi-era slogans, wearing helmets and carrying shields. The white nationalists converged on the Lee statue inside the park and began chanting phrases like, "You will not replace us," and "Jews will not replace us." Hundreds of counter-protesters, religious leaders, Black Lives Matter activists, and anti-fascist groups known as Antifa quickly surrounded the park, singing spirituals, chanting, and carrying their own signs. The morning started peacefully with the white nationalists gathering at McIntyre Park outside downtown and the counter-demonstrators, including Cornel West and others, on the other side. And then, by 11 a.m., both sides made their way to Emancipation Park. The scene had exploded into taunting, shoving, and outright brawling. Three people were arrested in connection with the skirmishes. Barricades encircling the park and separating the two sides began to come down, and the police temporarily retreated. People were seen clubbing one another in the streets, and pepper spray filled the air. One of the white nationalists left the park bleeding, his head wrapped in gauze. Declaring the gathering an unlawful assembly, the police cleared the area before noon. The Virginia National Guard arrived as officers began arresting some who remained. The first public response from the White House came from the First Lady Melania Trump, who said, "Our country encourages freedom of speech, but let's communicate without hate in our hearts. No good comes from violence." After the rally was dispersed, its organizer, Jason Kessler, who calls himself a white advocate, complained in an interview that the group had been forced into a very chaotic situation. And then it goes on. Now, why is all this coming up again right now? Why is all this coming up from Joe Biden? Why is all this coming up from everybody else? Here in Charlottesville, it's the New York Times now, here in Charlottesville, Saturday's protest was the culmination of a year and a half of debate over the Lee statue. A movement to withdraw it began when an African-American high school student started a petition. The city council voted 3-2 in April to sell it, but a judge issued an injunction temporarily stopping the move. The city had been bracing for a sea of demonstrators, and on Friday night, hundreds of them carrying lit torches marched on the picturesque grounds of the University of Virginia, founded in 1819. Now, understand that this debate over the statue and moving the statue was what was the core issue that was happening in the city of Charlottesville that led to this entire ordeal taking place. And people forget that, right? People forget that the fact that this was about a statue being moved. And the president's comments at the time, which he said on both sides, were the people who were defending the statue and the people who were protesting the statue. And then that led to hatred. That led to this then violence, and that led to everything else. So that one statement of the both sides has been taken into context now, taken out of context, I think, and used against him perpetually now. Perpetually. But you also have to understand this. When the New York Times first wrote the story about the president's comments, they mention in the story the president condemned white supremacy. But they don't tell you that, though. They don't tell you that now because they act like the president never condemned it. This is what I mean in terms of the double standard, right? We're supposed to pretend now like the president back then looked at a bunch of white supremacists and a bunch of people fighting white supremacists and said that they're both sides, meaning white supremacists and the people fighting them, and that had nothing to do with the Robert E. Lee statue. If you believe that, you have to then dismiss the president's comments condemning white supremacy, which he said the exact same day. But they don't bring that up because it goes against the narrative. Just like how this call with the rabbi, which lasted almost an hour, goes against the narrative. So outside of Cassie Hunt's show on MSNBC, you're not going to hear about it because it goes against the narrative. Because what kind of an anti-Semite would spend 50 minutes on the phone with a rabbi? Well, the same kind of guy who would also have a Jewish son-in-law who's his top advisor and a daughter who converted to Judaism and then Jewish grandkids. That guy. But again, this is what I mean in terms of narratives that are pushed by the media, pushed by the left, pushed by the candidates, lies, and then lies that are repeated and repeated again. We'll talk more about this, of course, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. But Joe Biden's campaign began on this premise of Charlottesville, which is why all this is coming up again. So were there good people on both sides? Well, first you have to understand the day that Charlottesville happened on August 12th. There was a professor involved who was trying to have free speech advocated. He's not a Nazi. His name is Douglas Laycock. He's a law professor at the University of Virginia. And he was advocating a free speech rally. And civil liberties groups were trying to file a lawsuit over the city's decision to move the Unite the Right rally. I know it sounds crazy, but the American Civil Liberties Union was fighting on behalf of the white supremacists to say that they had a right to march. I know that sounds nuts, right? Now, are the ACLU good people or bad people in this instance? I mean, they went to court. They tried to fight to allow the events to occur, the march to occur. Are they good people or bad people in that? And that's my question. The city had tried to block the Unite the Right rally from happening, right? And the ACLU came out and said, well, tough. And they said, look, the ACLU of Virginia and the Rutherford Institute is also a free speech institute. They said the city's decision violated the First Amendment. They sent a letter Tuesday expressing their concerns at the time. They said this is wrong. They said that, you know, moving this rally is in violation of their freedom of speech. And they fought on this, and then a judge ruled on their side. Now, is that because the ACLU is a bunch of anti-Semitic racists? Is that why? Is that the reason for this? And then you have to understand, too, that this rally, this idea of the Robert E. Lee statue, a year and a half, they were debating moving the statue. A year and a half. Back and forth, back and forth. The weekend of the violence in Charlottesville, that August 12th of 2017, when that happened, this professor who I mentioned to you was going to hold a free speech rally, a free speech event, to say that people are allowed to come and to advocate their opinions and they shouldn't have to leave and they shouldn't have to move and they shouldn't have to do any of those things. That was something that he wanted to do. It was something that a lot of people were prepared to be in place for. Charlottesville kind of made itself a target by deciding they wanted to remove the statue and by stringing the whole thing out, said Douglas Laycock, a University of Virginia law professor who's planning to give a talk on free speech Saturday as part of a day of reflective conversation organized by the university. This is from August 11th. Okay, so right before the violence happens, right before all this occurs. So now you have this professor who's blaming the city right now, blaming the city. And saying that they keep dragging this out and they've done a terrible job with allowing people to be heard about this. And so the professor says that they were going to organize a free speech discussion about all this And so as a consequence, the professor started getting death threats from everybody. Now, is he a good guy or a bad guy, this professor, who's just advocating freedom of speech, allowing people to be able to be heard, allowing people the right to be able to say that the statue has a place in Virginia history? Is he a good guy or a bad guy? In the run-up to Saturday, there had been confusion over where precisely the Unite the Right rally was going to take place. The judge ruled in favor of Mr. Kessler and his group that they could go to that park. And so you understand now there were a number of events happening simultaneously in all this. When the violence breaks out, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon now on August 12th. The president's at Bedminster. And he tweets out the following: "We all, in capital letters, must unite and condemn all that hate stands for. There is no place for this kind of violence in America. Let's come together as one!" Exclamation mark. David Duke retweets it and says the following, quote, "I would recommend you take a good look in the mirror and remember it was white Americans who put you in the presidency, not radical leftists." New York Times wrote a story about that and saying that the president's condemnation of white supremacists led to them coming after him. Now, we're all supposed to pretend like none of that occurred, that there wasn't a year and a half debate over moving the Robert E. Lee statue. We were supposed to pretend that a very well recognized law professor at UVA was fighting for free speech. We're supposed to forget the ACLU was involved. We're supposed to forget historical groups were involved. We're supposed to forget all this. And just think that on August 12th of 2017, white nationalists showed up and brave people showed up to stop them. And there was a big fight. The president failed to condemn them. And that's just not true. But this is what I mean in terms of the narrative. So here's Joe Biden launching his campaign last week with his dopey little video and the first word out of his mouth.
Charlottesville, Virginia is home to the author of one of the great documents in human history. We know it by heart. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. We've heard it so often, it's almost a cliche, but it's who we are. We haven't always lived up to these ideals. Jefferson himself didn't, but we have never before walked away from them. Charlottesville is also home to a defining moment for this nation in the last few years.
Now, stop it right there for a second. You probably don't know this either because they don't talk about this. The New York Times story from that day, again, of the 12th, right? "The violence in Charlottesville was the latest development in a series of tense dramas unfolding across the United States over plans to remove statues and other historical markers of the Confederacy. The battles have been intensified by the election of Mr. Trump, who enjoys fervent support from white nationalists." This is what the New York Times writes. "In New Orleans, tempers flared this spring when 4 Confederate-era monuments were taken down. Hundreds of far-right and liberal protesters squared off with occasional bouts of violence under another statue of Robert E. Lee. There were fisticuffs and a lot of shouting, but nothing like the violence seen in Charlottesville." You see what they do right away? They turn around and say that if you supported the Robert E. Lee statue, you were a far-right person or a white supremacist or something else. They leave out the fact that there were historical groups speaking out against this. There were African Americans speaking out against moving the Robert E. Lee statue. There were groups that were just about preserving things who were speaking out against this. What the New York Times just conveniently did is, after the attack in Charlottesville, they lumped everybody together and said these are far right people. You see? They're far right people. Up until that point, up until that moment where the violence broke out, and the president said there were good people on both sides, that had been the narrative in a number of these instances across the country for over a year or so, where you had these battles going on, some actually with fisticuffs and others just in court and in yelling at town hall meetings and yelling at these close debates that would happen in town councils and colleges and that sort of thing. And the idea was, let's remember that good people on both sides can disagree with this notion of whether or not a statue of a Confederate general should come down. And just because you support the statue staying up doesn't mean you're a bad person or a white supremacist or anything. Up until that moment, that was the conventional wisdom that almost everybody universally declared and everybody agreed with. Literally up until that very moment. which is why the ACLU was and the Rutherford Institute were siding with Kessler's group to allow them to be able to march and have their protest in the park by the statue of Robert E. Lee. It's also why the professor at UVA was speaking out and saying we need to have a free speech thing about this because they're trying to just, you know, cover this up. It's why historians were speaking out. But the minute that that violence broke out, and the minute the president said there were good people on both sides, and he clearly said later he was referencing the people who were supporting the Robert E. Lee statue staying there. And he condemns white supremacy. He condemns the Nazis so much so that they come after him on social media, which generates another New York Times story about how they're coming after the president now because they didn't view his comments fairly because the president condemned them. You see now how all this is taken out of context? Do you see now how all this is spun by people who rely on you to have a short memory and for the media to just pretend like none of that other stuff ever took place? This is literally what I'm talking about right now. From the president who Israel says they've never had a closer friendship with, the president who spent an hour on the phone with a rabbi the other day after this horrific attack in California, and the president who's got Jewish family members. It's truly shameful. It really is. But I hope you know more now than most people do on the issue. So good for you. So Joe Biden's getting ready for his big speech in Pittsburgh. And of course, in the meantime, his entire campaign was launched on a lie. I want to just share with you this exact quote from what the president said at the Trump Tower presser on Charlottesville. Ready? Quote. Excuse me, they didn't put themselves down as neo-Nazis, and you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had, there were fine people on both sides. You had people in that group, excuse me, I saw the same pictures you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, of a very, very important statue and renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. Now, another reporter gives another question. The president says, quote, I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. I don't know how much more equivocal you can be on that. Then the president went out and said the following. Racism is evil and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis and white supremacists and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. But what the media did is they took that fine people on both sides and they took that and they just said, oh, he's defending Nazis. And he wasn't, because there were so many people who were in the center of the debate on Robert E. Lee and the statue and Robert E. Lee in the park. And there were other people who were protesting that day because it was a Saturday. There were other people protesting that day besides the people who were the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, who the president said, quote, I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. He's talking about the people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. And again, up until that moment, when these conversations were taking place across America, nobody was suggesting that if you supported keeping up a statue, that you were a white nationalist or a racist or a KKK member. No, nobody was. This is one of those things that changed on that day because they saw it as an opportunity to go after Trump. And then they rewrite history to pretend as if anytime there was a discussion about leaving up a statue, the only people that supported it were neo-Nazis and people in white hoods. And that's it. And it's not true. It's absolutely not true. It's a lie. The debate was going on for a year and a half, just on this Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville, just on that one statue and the renaming of the park. And when the president said, this has been going on a long time, before me, before President Obama, it's going on for a long time. The conversation regarding the statue, but also the hatred that people have going on well before he ever got there. But again, this is what I mean in terms of the spin, the lie, and the spin that happens after. So you understand why, after this attack that happens on Saturday, not only does the media and that montage that we played you come out and blame Trump for that, but then Joe Scarborough does the exact same thing. Joe Scarborough comes out and says Donald Trump has blood on his hands because the president was talking about a coup, the attempted coup against him to the NRA. So in addition to the comments from Charlottesville, now the media is also blaming him for comments he made, cut nine.
Your words, they certainly go on the border an awful lot, but coup, that's just a lie. You know it's a lie. You know it's irresponsible. You know it's as irresponsible as when you say enemy of the people. That's kind of like when you talked about a Second Amendment solution to stopping Hillary Clinton from appointing federal judges that people didn't like. Second Amendment solution, the killing of Hillary Clinton. This is, we are so far beyond dog whistles here, Donald. We are so far beyond dog whistles. The blood that is spilled is on your hands from white nationalists, from people that listen to that sort of rhetoric. Any violence to journalists, enemy of the people. The kill list? Yes, let's go back to the kill list. Your Justice Department, let somebody that has a manifesto inspired by white nationalist killers, including a guy that slaughtered over 68 children. Your Attorney General and you let that person walk? No, we are so past dog whistles now, Donald.
You know, and by the way, to cut this knucklehead off, the guy who killed the woman with his car in Charlottesville was sentenced to prison. He was found guilty on federal charges. But regardless, I mean, this is the game that they play. And, you know, you got to speak out against it because not only is it just a giant lie, but it's also what Democrats are using now since they have nothing and there's no Russia collusion and the economy is going well. So it's, oh, he's a racist. Oh, he's anti-Semitic. And it's just utter nonsense. All right. So Joe Biden's about to speak. And yes, there's outrage over a television show that aired last night. I'll tell you why. And you're probably asking the same question that I'm asking. Just how much money did the Marvel Avengers Endgame movie bring in? Was it hype or did people actually show up and pay? The answer for you, don't go away.
Riccioli 306, Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.